Recording.
Off you go.
So what we're doing is we're gathering stories to turn it into a theatre performance and also trying to preserve history sort of thing.
Yeah.
So the first question is basically tell us what you were doing when you were our age. So at the moment I'm 22.
Yeah.
Just finished university. I like going to the gym and playing piano. So can you tell us what you were doing when you were my age?
Yeah. 22. I was at a disused colliery in Sheffield, which my father bought in the 1960s, and it was called Handsworth Nunnery. Okay. And it was a disused colliery which we were refurbishing. So I was refurbishing the old buildings of this disused colliery, and I also worked at British Telecom at the time.
Sorry, I've got a mouthful of melon.
Sorry, that's fine, yeah.
So what sort of stuff did you do, like, when you weren't working? What did you get up to?
I lived in an area of Sheffield called Handsworth, and there was no Asian population there, and we were six brothers, so we would be interacting with the local community, because they'd never seen any coloured people before. This was the early 70s, and going to the local youth club, where we were the only coloured people there. So around about 20 years of age, I was just in the community. Plus, we would go and help the elderly people in Handsworth as well. If we could help them do any shopping, just generally getting into the community, so they realised that coloured people were similar to English people.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's so cool. So, how do you think, in contrast to when you were our age?
Yeah.
Things have changed, so what do you think Sheffield's like now? How do you think community's changed? How has your life changed?
Well, my life changed because I married an English girl 30 years ago, and I'm still happily married now, a proper ginger-haired lady with freckles and everything. And my children have grown up now. Two of my daughters have got degrees. One's a doctor, one's a teacher down in London. So I think, as regards interracial living, is a lot easier, because when I got married to my wife, it was very difficult from both sides of the family, from my side, the Asian side, and from her side, the English side. It was very, very difficult to have an interracial marriage in them days.
Oh,
and I think today nobody even looks at it. And it's a lot easier.
So why do you think that is? What do you think?
I think society's changed. It's more multicultural, plus, as they call it, the global village. Now, you've sat on the internet. My father came from the northwest frontier of Pakistan in the foothills of the Himalayas. And they sat up in them villages now, and you can be Skyping somebody in Europe. There and then, so I think in them days, it were a big thing to go and travel 4,000 miles. Now, 4,000 miles is you're there in 8 hours. Whereas my father, when he came here, he said it took him 4 weeks on a ship, coming through the whole, through the Suez Canal, getting to Europe, then getting to Liverpool and that. So travelling 4,000 miles, taking 4 weeks to 8 hours, I think is a global village now. So I think that's why society's changing.
Amazing. So where do you live now?
I still live at Handsworth. Mm-hmm. Still born, I'm born and bred in Handsworth. I still live in Handsworth. I'm retired now from British Telecom. I'm just a part-time taxi driver, socialising with people. So yeah, and I enjoy it.
So what sort of stuff do you do when you're not ferrying people like us around?
I do a lot of charity work.
Okay.
And one of the charities what I set up was is, for the last 10 years I go to the foothills of the Himalayas where my father's village is, and all the Afghan refugee children what came from Afghanistan into Pakistan. I do a sports day every year in November, and I have 200 kids waiting for me, and they emulate this sports day on the sports day of a British school. So they have egg and spoon races, beanbag races, and various other things. And these children, for 10 years I've done it now, it's cost me a couple of £1,000. But every child in that village has a medal. The first three get trophies, but every child has a medal around the neck. And the mother said to me, they're always waiting for you. Every year they're waiting for you. And when you've gone, they keep their medals on for 2 weeks.
Oh.
They won't take them off.
That's amazing.
So I do a lot of charity work. Plus, another thing I did as well, I helped set up a school over there. I took a sabbatical from BT for a year and helped set up a girls' school. So this about them Muslim people don't allow education for girls, it's a key importance in Islam that women are educated to a high level, but more than men, because they're the ones who educate the children. So that's a myth. Perception of the Western society that Muslim women don't get educated. They do. They should be educated higher than the man. Because a woman educates a nation, a man just educates himself, because the next generation, the children, it's the mother who educates the children.
Wow.
So yeah, I do a lot of charity work.
And
like I said, my children have grown up now. I've just had my first granddaughter, and I just work 7 in the morning till 11 o'clock, semi-afternoon prayers, and then 2 till 4, you can do what you want. The world stops because I have a siesta.
Okay.
No matter what the world's doing, 2 till 4 every day, I switch everything off, my mobile phone, everything, and I go home and I relax for 2 hours, 2 till 4.
Amazing.
So, oh, yeah. And that's my life in a nutshell. 6 brothers. And we've still got the pit at Handsworth. It's Handsworth Nunnery. The reason why they call it a nunnery, not rather than a colliery, this land was owned by the church, and some nuns out Bawdre owned the land. So when they were trying to mine this piece of land, the nun says, yes, you can mine it, but you have to call it a nunnery. Because it belonged to the nuns.
So
I still live at Handsworth Nunnery. They've been yard 40 acres of land. You know what I mean? Prime residential land, so yeah, just enjoy life.
Oh, wow.
6 brothers.
Amazing. So, our final question.
Yes.
In fact, no, we have 2 more questions. So, if you imagine hypothetically, if you were in charge of Sheffield, if you were the mayor for the day,
yeah,
what would you change about Sheffield? And
what I'd change about Sheffield, and it's clear this, is the education policy for Sheffield. 25 years ago, I said there will be pockets of areas where you have ethnic minorities, and they will educate you there, the healthcare will be there, you will be born there and you will die there. And that's exactly what's happening in Sheffield now. You have pockets of ethnic minorities where they're building the secondary schools there, the healthcare's in there as well, and English people don't even tend to drive through them areas now. We need integration. From an early age, i.e. from primary school to secondary school, you must have integration. You have now schools what are predominantly 99% Asian, whereas I was brought up in the predominantly white area, and we were only 6 brothers. And I'll never forget this, the secondary school deputy head said to us once, excuse me at break time, we said, what's your problem? And there were no other colours in this school, 700 pupils, and it was a rough area just to the other side of Manor. He said, can you not walk about together at break time? You're causing racial tension. And that was 6 brothers. So my dream is that in the next 20 to 50 years, the education policies for all the major cities in the United Kingdom, integration is the key for the next generation. If an Asian person has been brought up in a certain area from primary school to secondary school in that area, he's never interacted with any other people, then how's he going to have any skills for life when he goes out to work, or you know, has to interact with other people? He's not going to have them skills. So that's what I, if I was the mayor of Sheffield, would like to do, say to the policymakers, you're short-sighted. And one of the famous schools is just down here on the left-hand side, Sheffield Academy. Every year there is racial fighting between the white population this side and the Asian population that side, and nobody's ever addressed it. And I got involved, and I sorted it out with the police, because every year it happens, but nobody seems to be wanting to address it. So
integration is key.
I think you've got the wrong person, because I could, you know what I mean, keep talking, and that's it, recorder of yours would get full. But it's something I'm passionate about, because I'm an English girl, and I love her more so now than I did then. That I'm living proof that integration works.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But people I call it the ostrich syndrome. They're burying their heads in the sand. And if something's not done soon, you'll see the backlash. That's the school there on the left. Very famous school. Every year they had problems until I got involved about 14 years ago, and then I helped them sort it out. But the policy is exactly the same again. Now in Darnell, predominantly Asian area further out, they're building a new secondary school on the stadium. They built a new primary school, 2 back primary schools. They built a medical health care centre as well. So you will be born in a ghetto,
yeah,
and you will die in a ghetto. So please don't think I'm harsh when I say that, but it's my heart at 50. I've done what I needed to do. You know, I mean, my kids are educated, but I feel for the majority of ethnic minority people in these areas, because it's down to your postcode as well. So if that was the... And another little story I've got for you as well, I've got to tell you this. I went to a meeting once, it was 10,000 people at this city hall in town, and the council leader was there, and the Lord Mayor of Sheffield were there with a lot of the dignitaries, and one of the dignitaries said, can we have Nisa Jaffa to come up on stage? Just out of the blue, I'm sat in the car with 10,000 people, and my father was with me, who's passed away now, and he went, go on, get on stage. I went, Dad, I've not rehearsed anything. So I guess up onto the stage, I went, this is from the heart. I'm going to tell you, I've not rehearsed anything. And I did a speech for 15 minutes, and at the end of that speech, the council leader and the Lord Mayor of Sheffield both went, this gentleman here, we would like him to meet us. This was about 15-year-old meeters, and we'd like to see if we can develop things. And I went to the meeting, went to the town hall with him, and he was 10 minutes late, so I walked out, tell his secretary, I'm a very busy man like the Lord Mayor. Tell him to rearrange the meeting. When he says 2 o'clock, make sure it's 2 o'clock. And I went back, and we had a meeting. Know what he said to me? How much money do you want to set a project up on? I haven't come for no money.
Yeah.
I've come to tell you that we need unity in Sheffield. And when I have got some unity, when I come back to you and ask for you some funding then,
yeah,
then you can't say no to me because you play one off against other. And he says, you're the first person ever to come in our office.
He said,
I don't want any money. So, you know what I mean? So my life is, I pray to God that, you know what I mean, we get integration from an early stage of life, and then things can only get better after that. Because at this moment in time, the Muslim community in the whole of Europe, stroke the world, we're in serious trouble. Everything you look at is anti-Muslim at the moment. Everything. And you just look at it and you think, my religion tells me I'm a peace, law-abiding person. All these people who do these terrorist attacks and things, they're not Muslim because it's forbidden. It is forbidden. If you believe in God, we're happy for you. If you don't believe in God, we're still happy for you. That's what my religion teaches me. So my dream is that we have, in 50 years, a global village like they say it is, when we haven't got no racism, you know what I mean? And just because you've got a religion doesn't make any difference to anybody else. And that's my dream. And I go home and I pray every day. And when I go home in the afternoon, before my siesta, I always say my afternoon prayers. And a couple of people over in cab, if they go to hospital, I'll always say, I'll pray for you. So whoever's been in my car that day, I pray for them.
Oh.
So it's not just the same people, gets in my car that day. And people look at me, go, nice, I'm going to say, pray for you this afternoon. And my prayers work. Oh. And I'll tell you the final thing, I've had my arms broken, I broke my legs, I broke my neck, all different accidents. Three last accident, broke my feet, my pelvis, everything, on a motocross, I'm a motorbike man as well. And they said, you'd never walk again. And I'm walking, I'm moving, even the senior doctor in Sheffield went, I can't believe what you've done. I went, you know, when you do good, God looks after you.
Yeah.
And I'm still here, 50. And honest to God, I have got, half of my body is full of titanium bolts, the complete left-hand side, arm, back of my neck, my foot's been crushed, I've got a steel femur, steel pelvis.
Oh, gosh.
And they weren't just one accident, these were several different accidents. So I've been through a lot in life, and my theory in life is, if you do good, good will always come back to you. And that's my life. Thank you. Thanks for that. I enjoyed that. Thank you very much for giving me an opportunity. Like a soapbox, isn't it? Just get me a soapbox and send me it.
Well, there is one more question.
Go on then.
So if you could give us one piece of advice, what would it be?
One piece of advice I would always give you, never ever judge a book by its cover. That's the only thing I'd say to you. Because if you look at me and I just said to you, for three ladies, now close your eyes for 30 seconds. Just close your eyes. My name's Mick Johnson, I'm born and bred Yorkshireman. I'm that much of a Yorkshireman, I won't even eat Lancashire hot pot. It's a different county. Now open your eyes. Does it make any difference what colour I am? Do you like it?
Yeah, I do.
You like that
actually.
One? And the final one I've got, if the proper racist is this, fair enough, that didn't work. You tell me, my dear friend, how many nights you spent in your mother's womb, the 9 months you in your mother's womb, decide what colour you were going to come out. Because I didn't have to be born this colour, and he has to be born here, and he has to be born this religion. And that penny does drop then.
Yeah.
Because they think, oh my God, I could have come out black.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? I've got a few tactics which I do utilise from time to time.
Very nice.
You know what I mean? So, there you go.
Awesome.
But back to what I said, never ever judge a book by its cover until you've opened the book and looked inside it.
Oh.
And that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, job done.
Amazing.
Yeah, thank you.
What's your name, sorry?
My name is Jaffa.
Jaffa.
As the orange with six brothers and a set. Like I said, my father bought an old pit. Can you imagine an Asian man buying a pit? Them miners were racist people anyway. He bought the whole pit, a 50-acre site. You know what I mean? In them days. He just passed away 8 weeks ago, and I used to go to Pakistan regularly to see him. Like I said, I just go around the world now doing whatever I can to help people. Drop me anywhere, and I'll find children. And I do football teams, cricket teams. But that sports day is the best, though. It's amazing.
Sounds amazing. I want to come with you.
I'm telling you, you know, like I said, I've done my bit now. I've done my 25 years of BT. And then I get pensioned off at 55. I've got 5 years just to potter about meeting people. And a lot of elderly people love me because they said, I wish you were my neighbour.
Yeah.
Because I like that. My neighbour, in Islam, in the Muslim way, he says your neighbour's got as much right as your family.
Yeah.
Especially if they're elderly.
Yeah.
You must go around. And my neighbour is Mrs. Jackson's husband, Dad, and I used to tell her, every Tuesday and Wednesday, you must come and have tea at my house. She was a bit reluctant at first because Western society don't do that, do they?
No.
But you know, at end, before she died, for 3 years she would come to my house and she's like my mother. So, you know
amazing.
What I mean?
Hey, do you want to volunteer with Age Better in Sheffield?
I'll be honest with you, I will volunteer for anything, but at the moment in time, because I do a bit of this, and I've just got my first granddaughter.
Oh.
So I go home at 1 o'clock and I just look at my granddaughter and think, this is the next generation. So at the moment, I think I'm doing enough. Charity work and community work,
keep
you know what I mean?
In mind.
No, I will do. And keep me in mind. And like I said, that tape recording you've got there, if you want to take my telephone, I can go anywhere and stand in front of anybody and I can say whatever you want, but what my heart tells me to say.
Yeah.
And I don't care if it's the King of England or whoever stood in front of me, right is right and wrong is wrong. What is now, you've got too much of a grey area.
Yeah.
Life's simple, there's right and there's wrong. There's no in between.
Yeah.
And I live my life on that policy.
Oh.
If you're wrong, I'm telling you to your face, you're wrong. Don't matter if you're King of England, that you're going to get it. But if you're right, I will fight you till the end.
Yeah.
Too many people blow with the wind. Oh, I'm one of them sheep what will not go with 10,000 sheep. I will walk the other way if I know I'm right. And now, it's just sheep, innit? You just, one sheep goes that way, everybody starts going that way.
Yeah.
Mighty is right. No. God give us all the brain. We should use it. My name is Jaffa, and my telephone number is 07788. If ever you need me for anything, I'm the man.
Thank you. It's okay. Pen, Hannah. Oh, thank you. Okay. Telephone is what?
07788.
07788.